The uprisings around the country have kept three names in the public discourse: George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, and Breonna Taylor. But beyond protests in the streets, each of these cases is also playing out in the legal system. The four officers who killed George Floyd have been arrested and charged. The three men who participated in the killing of Ahmaud Arbery have also been arrested and charged. And the FBI has launched an investigation into the killing of Breonna Taylor. Paul Butler is here to explain where each of these cases stands today. Paul is a professor of law at Georgetown University, a former prosecutor, and the author of Chokehold: Policing Black Men. Paul, great to have you back with us.
Hey, Tanzina. It's great to be here.
The Ahmaud Arbery case is currently in court. What have we learned so far about the men who were involved?
Last week, there was very graphic testimony at a hearing where three men appear to have chased Mr. Arbery, essentially hunted him down. We learned that not only was he shot, he was also hit with the truck. And shortly after he expired, or actually probably while he was dying, he was called the N-word by one of his assailants.
Let's turn to Breonna Taylor's case, Paul. It's being investigated by the FBI. Now, what we understand is that the officers who were involved in Breonna's case and her killing have not yet been arrested. So tell us a little bit about why the FBI has gotten involved and yet the officers involved are still haven't been arrested.
There have been major concerns about the effectiveness of the Louisville Police Department. There have been high-profile incidences in which their body cams should have been on, and they were not. We know that when police officers are suspected of misconduct, they have a lot of privileges that other suspects wouldn't have. And so it may be that because of these protections that they frequently win through collective bargaining, that the police department doesn't have all of the information that it needs.
We are also very aware as a country about George Floyd's death. This is a death that has reverberations internationally at this point. Many of us have seen the horrific video. The four officers involved have now been arrested and charged. Paul, what do you make of the charges right now where they stand? We know the first police officer who was arrested, who had his knee on Mr. Floyd's neck, those charges have now been increased to second degree murder from what we understand.
Yeah, so that's a former officer, Clavin. He has the book thrown at him. He's charged with second degree murder, third degree murder, and manslaughter. The prosecution has a tough case, despite what we've all seen on videotape. The fact is that most police officers who are charged with murder end up walking. The charges are dismissed or a jury finds them not guilty. Somewhere between 100, 150 officers have been charged with murder, only 10 murder convictions. So it may be with the array of charges against this first officer that the prosecution is looking either for a compromised verdict from the jurors. They might not find him guilty of second degree murder, which is a 40-year sentence, but maybe third degree murder, which carries a 25-year sentence. And it may be that the prosecution is trying to strengthen its case if someone wants to make a deal. So, for example, one of the other three officers who's charged with aiding and abetting might agree to testify in favor of the prosecution. That person might get a deal.
Paul, particularly in the case of George Floyd, we know that there have been sustained protests so far, at least for 2 weeks in the United States, invoking George Floyd as sort of the turning point here. How much of a role did protests and this uprising we're seeing across the United States play in Attorney General Keith Ellison's decision and others to increase and change the charges against Officer Chauvin and also charge and arrest the remaining three officers in the case of Floyd?
So we know that the day after Mr. Floyd was killed, the four officers were discharged from the force. But in a press conference, the district attorney said he wasn't sure there was enough evidence to charge anyone with a crime. He said, based on the video, he saw evidence that laid in favor of charging, But he also suggested that there was other evidence that suggested that charges weren't appropriate. The protests started immediately, and then within 4 days, the first officer was arrested. There was concern by the family and the community that the third-degree murder charges didn't reflect the gravity of the crime. And there was also concern that the other three officers still hadn't been charged. So massive protests happened all over the United States, indeed all over the world. And then last week, we learned that Attorney General Ellison, an African-American former congressman, had been selected to lead the case, and that the charges against the first officer had been upgraded to second-degree murder, and that the other three officers were charged with aiding and abetting murder, which carries the same 40-year sentence as murder.
Paul, a couple things that are happening at the policy level, at least. There was a federal bill, I believe, that was passed making lynching a federal crime. It's only taken hundreds of years to do that. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm thinking about Emmett Till. He was the 14-year-old child who was lynched in Mississippi in 1955. He was an African-American who was alleged to have whistled at a white woman. His mother decided to leave the casket open, she said, so they could see, the world could see what they had done to him. It was a very graphic image. It was graphic in the way that the 10-minute video of George Floyd's suffering and death is graphic. The Emmett Till pictures broadcast all over the world galvanized a civil rights movement. Rosa Parks went to a rally for Emmett Till, and Parks, a seasoned activist herself, soon after refused to move in that bus in Montgomery, Alabama. So the hope is that these graphic images of Mr. Floyd's killing will also galvanize a movement and lead to some constructive reform, like what we're seeing from Congress, this Justice Bill of 2020.
I'd like to talk a little bit about those reforms, because when we see the killing of George Floyd, many people remember the killing of Eric Garner at the hands of police officers here in New York City a couple of years ago. And both of these gentlemen, Eric Garner was killed essentially with a chokehold. There is talk of chokehold reform. I'm wondering if there's also talk of reforming the move that was used against Mr. Floyd on his neck. Paul, do we know where police departments stand with their use of physical force right now?
So the problem with police reform is that there are 18,000 different police departments in the United States, and there are 18,000 different ways of policing. What Congress would do with this Justice Act of 2020 is to establish some national requirements with regard to the use of force. And they're going to use the power of the purse. Police departments get a lot of money from the federal government. From now on, this money is going to come with conditions if the act is passed, including a rule that police officers could only use deadly force as a last result. They'd have to engage in de-escalation, and if they can resolve the situation without resulting to killing a person, that would be required. Incredibly, that's not the law right now.
And many of these incidents, as we know, have been caught on video, which has really changed people's perception about when these uses of force are implemented. Paul Butler, professor of law at Georgetown University, former prosecutor and author of Chokehold, Policing Black Men. Paul, thank you for joining us, and I hope you'll join us again sometime.
Always a pleasure, Tanzina.